Between never-ending laundry cycles and incoming emails, you've got plenty on your to-do list. Give yourself one less thing to worry about and let DoorDash take care of your next meal. You want Chinese? They want pizza. Someone is craving Froyo. There's something for everybody on DoorDash. Continue supporting restaurants in your community. There are thousands of restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash that need your patronage now more than ever. DoorDash is the app that brings you food you're craving right now, right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app. Choose what you want to eat. Your food will be left outside your door with a new contactless delivery drop-off setting. With over 300,000 partners in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia, you can support your local go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code Strauss, S-T-R-A-U-S-S, Strauss. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code Strauss. Don't forget, that's code Strauss for $5 off your first order with DoorDash.
And like they said, enjoy this moment, and have fun with it.
I have a hard time picking against the Clippers.
Who do you think is going to win the West this year?
The Clippers.
I think their pieces fit together a little bit better.
I think it's the Clippers' championship to lose this year.
The Clippers are the best team in basketball.
So I'm going with the Clippers.
That's why the Clippers are my choice.
I'm going to say the Clippers.
So I'm going with the Clippers.
I can't go with the Lakers.
Here come the Clippers.
Clippers.
The Clippers.
Clippers.
The bench, they just wear you down over the course of 48 minutes.
Ha, 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 ha. Yeah!
What it do, baby?
If only I could buy Andre Iguodala's house that he sold in Lafayette that has the putting green on the premises. That'd be pretty cool.
You should have hit him up for a deal. Be like, hey, can you know, just shave a couple million off of that?
I mean, I do wonder. That is one of those things where there's no rule against it, but it's pretty shady if there was some kind of kickback like that. None of these guys would do that. It would not be worth it. Some favorable coverage would not be worth it to any of these guys to sell their house at a discount. But
you don't think Andre Iguodala would give up $2 million just for you?
Andre Iguodala, the man who loves money more than any player I think I've ever met in my life and who thinks about it constantly.
I swear, Andre, I'll write a nice athletic story.
And who, by the way, doesn't care about coverage at all. does not seem to care. I feel like the incentives are not in my favor to get that Andre Iguodala mansion right there. let's look it up. Andre's house in Lafayette, which I feel comfortable saying because he sold it. Otherwise, I wouldn't want to say like, oh, Andre's got a house in Lafayette. Feel free to.
I think it's sold in like the mid threes or something like that. $3 million, $3.something million.
Oh, these stories really go a little more mainstream than I thought. I mean, this is a Yahoo Sports story that he sold the house.
Housing has become a very interesting, like Netflix, one of Netflix, maybe Netflix, the most popular show on
Jade,
it.
Jade, we're rolling, baby. I'm into this as a topic. You were saying housing, go.
Selling Sunset is like super popular on Netflix, and it is about a real estate group in, you know, the Sunset area of like Hollywood. They sell in the hills and they just go through houses. And honestly, you know, my wife watches it and I don't not pay attention.
No, it's
particularly when they go through the house. There's like the drama of the show that I think keeps people interested that I'm not that, you know, personally interested in, but they go to these like, this is going to be, you know, 4.2 million for this many square feet, this many bedrooms. And they go through and it's like, man, this is kind of fascinating, honestly.
No, it's totally fascinating, and it is fun to do that Robin Leach, Lives of the Rich and Famous, How Are They Really Living? And I think that what you see time and time again, they end up selling the house for less than what they listed it for, less than what they bought it for. And I think some of that for these celebrities is the house is way too tailored to them. I saw that recently for a Shaq house out in Florida. And obviously, when you're taking the tour of the Shaq house, everything is just shacked out, and the court has Shaq stuff all over it. And I'm sure everything, because of just his size, is tailored to him. And if you're some other rich guy buying it, I don't necessarily, unless you're the biggest Shaquille O'Neal fan, it just doesn't make sense to pay for all they had to do to make it Shaq specific.
Shaq makes an absurd amount of money. When I was at Oklahoma State, he came as like what the student union or who, I don't remember the group. They like got together a bunch of money to go buy a guest speaker, and they decided on Shaq, and they brought Shaq in, and he filled up the entire Gallagher Iba Arena, which is like 13,000 people there for like a Shaq speech. And apparently I think he got like somewhere like $500,000 or something for it. And he just flew in, was in town for like 2 hours, and it was not a rehearsed speech at all. He came in and he had played against Travis Ford, who was the basketball coach at the time. And Travis Ford was like, I guess, moderating it. And Shaq didn't even know. This is how unprepared he was. He just goes up there, kind of like jokes around with Travis Ford for like 10 minutes. And then is like, I'm bored. Everyone that wants to ask me a question can come up. And you do a dance move, and if I like your dance move, you can ask me a question. And he did that for, and he did that for an hour, and then it was over, and he got on a plane to go to Alabama to do the same thing for another like $500,000. And
wow.
It probably was 3 hours of his time with zero preparation.
And yet he's listing his house in Lake Butler, Florida, recently listed. The Windermere Mansion of retired basketball legend Shaquille O'Neal is on the market again. It is 31,000 square feet. I'm just saying this to you, Slater, in case you're interested in potentially buying it. It is priced at $19.5 million. And it's been listed four times since 2018 without fetching a buyer, with the asking price dropping three times. This is what I'm saying. It's too shacked out. That's my guess on this particular property. Too shacked out.
Days on the market, days on Zillow. You know, that's typically, the longer it goes, the worse it's going
to
be.
To anybody listening, it seems like you can get a good deal here. This is, what is it, a seller's market or a buy? It's a buyer's market. Shaq's house, buyer's market. Andre's house sold for less than listing. So I don't know what's going on with real estate in the lives of the rich and famous, but for whatever reason, I am interested in this. When I read about Pat Riley having two properties on Malibu, I like looking it up and checking out, okay, what is Pat Riley got going on? This is the sickness of it. I am interested in houses Pat Riley owns that he doesn't even spend time in, because that's his constant complaint, is that he would love to be on Malibu, but he's hard at work in the Miami Heat offices. It looks like to a good end. It seems like they're doing pretty well. But I'm just on the internet just looking at this property that Pat Riley can't even be bothered to spend any time in. But I'm in.
By the way, that's a personal choice, Pat Riley. You've done enough in your life where you could just go live in Malibu and never work a minute in your life again. Enjoy all of it. You know, your life has presented to you, but instead he's like in the bubble, right? I mean, every game they like pan up and it's him and like Mickey Arison, he's wearing a mask, like just loving Jimmy Butler, like hustle plays.
Yeah. It is a choice, Pat Riley. We're not going to feel sorry for you, but what's interesting to me about the Pat Riley houses on Malibu, which I guess he is now trying to rent out because he spends no time there. Or maybe he did rent out for a lot of money per month, if you're interested in taking him up on that, is that the houses look kind of regular. Malibu, so expensive, maybe the most expensive property in the country, if not the world. KD, if you remember, sold recently his house in Malibu. But it's so expensive that sometimes you just have like a little nice beach cottage, and it's some absurd price. It's just crazy. You know, look at this Pat Riley property. Yeah, there are two garages. It just looks real regular to me, but regular in Malibu is like a insane mansion price in another place.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm sure people are loving this deep conversation.
Maybe that's why Selling Sunset's doing well. It's that you've got a lot of people doing not so great, and there's this weird voyeurism to just seeing what the people who can get anything have. And I don't know if that's necessarily making them feel better about their situation, but it might be hard to look away. The shack residence, by the way, 12 bedroom, 11.5 bathroom, contains an indoor basketball court, a cigar bar, walk-in humidor, showroom-style garage capable of holding 17 vehicles. Anthony, I got to say, this seems like a pretty nice property that Shaquille O'Neal owns. Not to shock you, not to surprise you.
Well, throw in a bid.
95-foot swimming pool, rock waterfall, private boat.
Let me just suggest, go a little under asking.
Yeah, a little under asking.
How much is a gallon of milk?
Regular milk?
I am surrounded by snakes and fucking morons. They're a bunch of silk-stalking fucks.
Welcome to the House of Strauss on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Stars hang with stars, winners hang with winners.
Welcome to the House of Strauss. We are joined by Anthony Slater of The Athletic, who is on the Lakers trail currently. Anthony, how you doing?
I'm good. West Finals in, mid-September. It's a little strange, right? Conference Finals are going on in, like, week two of the NFL is this week. And meanwhile, the MLB is about to have, like, a 16-team playoff like they're the NHL or NBA. What an odd time in sports.
Very odd. I've enjoyed the NBA trying to hide basketball from football. They just completely, with one of those games, it might have been game six of the Nuggets Clippers series, they just ducked the fade. They put it on at 10 a.m., I think. We're not even 10 a.m. on Sunday. We're not even going to try to compete on this level.
I think it's a good idea. You know what I mean? Like, I don't blame them. Like, I don't want them puffing out their chest thinking like, yeah, we're going to dominate, you know, Sunday night football or whatever. Yeah, although Lakers Nuggets game two is at 4:30 with leading into Sunday night football.
So that's the interesting quirk of it is that they did it in the Houston series. They put at least one of the Laker Rockets games on at 4:00. Which was very strange, I think, for West Coasters and people used to watching at 4:00 Pacific, I should say, the good time, the real time. But I don't have any criticism of them doing that. I frankly don't know enough if the juice is worth the squeeze, if you're better off trying to duck the football competition by going so early in your time slot, or whether you go with the traditional time slot and just eat the competition. But that is something that you've seen from the NBA just aggressively rescheduling and trying things that they were not trying earlier in the postseason just to try to get away from football stealing. And to credit the NBA, they're stealing from football too. You know, if you look at those numbers, I think for Thursday night kickoff, it looked like Lakers Rockets probably stole a couple million off the viewership. So we're seeing a sports pileup currently, and it's very confusing for the leagues to navigate now that we're out of the traditional zone.
I have set up a 2-TV living room right now, and I actually had both games on, so I guess I'm technically counting for both sides. I don't know how that goes.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Let's call up Nielsen and see how that all gets recorded. I like your TV setup. You got nice. I'm going to ask later for a TV recommendation, but if memory serves, in the before times, you had a very nice setup.
The before times. Well, it's also good data points for the NBA, right? This is such a unique situation, just from a sports TV standpoint. They're probably trying to learn what are good times, what are bad times, what type of NFL games can we go up against, how much of our viewership, you know, overlaps with NFL viewership, because also what's ahead of them is an ability to rearrange their entire schedule.
Yeah.
I don't even know what month they're going to start at this point, but or end, or when they are going to want the final. When do you think the NBA finals in 2023 is going to be?
Oh, I couldn't even begin to tell you. I think, though, what you're saying is correct, that this is a natural experiment where they can find out some things that they wouldn't have been able to even experiment with because the risk just wouldn't have been worth it. I don't think moving it up to 4:00 worked. You know, that when I saw the Laker Rocket viewership, it was way below what it should have been. And I don't think ducking the NFL that day was worth it. I think that they would have been better off just eating it. But I totally support them trying. I totally support them trying to find out. You know, maybe Laker fans are going to watch a game that starts at 4 o'clock on the West Coast. We don't know. You know, we've never.
The problem is that was a weekday. I understand it coming up Sunday. I actually like the they're so, you know, obviously you have the 10. I'm talking West Coast time, but you have the 10 a.m. football games, then you have like the 1:30 football games. They typically end around 4:30, and then the Sunday night game has like an hour pause before Sunday night football at 5:30. Lakers Nuggets game two. They thought it was gonna be Lakers Clippers, but in the Lakers Nuggets game two, I believe they put it 4:30, which is right in that window to be when people are done watching that, like, you know, chunk of football, and they're like, oh, well, there's not a game on for an hour. All right, I'll watch the Lakers game, and then maybe it draws you in. It's a really good game, and then you're like flipping back and forth.
Yeah, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I don't know how much it makes a difference on a weekend when a game is, because yeah, you have prime time, but the Super Bowl is on at 3:30 usually on the West Coast. So in theory, you've just got way more territory to work with for what a good time slot is on a weekend versus on a weekday, where obviously people are working, even if work from home is a little bit different. But that's just this little side thing that I like paying attention to. Obviously, it's a niche that I'm interested in. So it's just been such a change, too. I think it's an underrated change for in the throes of the deep playoffs to have these games so much earlier.
Well, you know what else is tough? The West Coast teams in West Coast markets are playing on they're playing their home games on the East Coast, where every single Lakers game in these playoffs, except for the one you mentioned, has been 6 p.m. West Coast, which feels early. You know, West Coast viewers are like, man, it's kind of like, you know, Lakers game starting at 6. Usually in the playoffs would be 7:30. Meanwhile, if you're actually physically the Lakers, you're like, this 9 p.m. game. Remember those when the Warriors would play the Cavs and it was like 6 p.m.?
It was brutal. That is such a thing that covering the league, you get more of a flavor for what's happening on the ground than just watching on TV. Certain things are just easy to dismiss. And I'm not saying it's anything approaching what the players are going through, obviously. But when you are covering a team on the road, you feel what a back-to-back is in a different way versus if you're just, oh, hey, free bat. I get to watch basketball on Tuesday and Wednesday. Sweet. You know, it's just such a different. And that is so true for a game that starts at 9 o'clock. You know, that's just a number if you're watching on TV. But if you're going through the experience and that thing ends and you get done with everything and it's around midnight, that's a little bit offensive to the circadian rhythm.
Yeah, just think about the difference when we would cover those Warriors-Cavaliers finals games, where if it was an Oracle home game, it was like 6, man, that's early tonight. We got to get there. Oh, traffic's going to be worse. You know, Warriors fans might not be in their seats in the first quarter. And just, you know, your entire day rhythm was like sped up because it was 6. Meanwhile, then you'd go to Cleveland and it was like, will this game ever get here? You know, you go to shoot around and typically the Warriors would kind of lollygag in a shoot around at noon because like Kerr was kind of trying to create more of a rhythm of, you know, the break between shoot around and the game, and they would be slower to get out of the arena because everyone was like, man, the game doesn't start till 9 tonight. And then, you know, what do you get out of the arena at 2 a.m. 2:30? The players obviously get out probably like, you know, midnight 1, but that's very different for them.
Yeah, I was always jealous of the players and the not just the players but the team in general on some of those long road trips back when I was doing beat writing, beat reporting, where they get done with the game, they eat the catering, and they get on a bus and they fly to the next location. Versus you're going to be there longer, and then you're going to get up early in the morning and get on Southwest, and like a shitty private eye, you're just always a little bit behind them. There's just always a little bit of a lag. But I don't know, you're a heroic road warrior, which is hard to say three times fast.
It also feels like 10 lifetimes ago at this point.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, flying all across the country. Like, when's the next time I'm going to be able to do that?
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny because it is a brutal life, but you miss just being able to do it. But I don't think it's brutal for you. You are, like I said, a heroic road warrior. I feel as though it bounces off you in a way that it never bounced off me or other people, where you're able to stay interested enough in America cities. I don't think there's one you dislike, unlike everybody else in NBA media, where they go
huge San Antonio fan. But I've covered so many games there, and they put that arena so far out of it.
It's like this compound that you just can't even. It's hard to even drive out of the San Antonio parking lot.
Yeah, so I mean, like, I'm not like curmudgeon about any city, but that's one where if I'm flying in, I'm not like, oh yeah, yes, I'm like, I'm about to land in San Antonio. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I will say that, like, you know, over the years, now this is what my seventh year covering the league, like, I was way more hyped in year one, year two, year three to get to these cities. The first time I've been to New Orleans, I'm like, man, I got to check out all parts of New Orleans. And then now I'm like, yeah, I'm going to New Orleans. It's cool. It's a different experience. But I'm not like so like boyish about it.
Well, you didn't have me around to go to that place with the fried alligator. I mean, that's a big attraction, obviously.
Destiny, I believe it's called. It's fried alligator is not bad.
Hi, I'm Tass Mellis from No Dunks on The Athletic. As the great philosopher Brian of the Backstreet Boys once said, everybody, yeah, hydrate your body, yeah, everybody, hydrate your body right. Hydration's back, all right. We all know we have to stay hydrated. I've used an app, a big water bottle, post-it notes. And proper hydration is extremely important right now. It can really help your immune system. Believe it or not, dehydration occurs daily in 3 out of 4 people. With Liquid IV, you have the fastest, most efficient way to stay hydrated. Each serving helps you get as much hydration as 2 to 3 bottles of water. I like using Liquid IV when I hit that afternoon lull. Instead of grabbing a coffee, I grab 1 stick of the lemon lime, put it in my water, and I get that energy boost I need without dehydrating my body and getting dry mouth. It's win-win because it contains 5 essential vitamins, more vitamin C than an orange, and as much potassium as a banana. Oh, my mate Lily would love it. It's healthier than sugary sports drinks with no artificial flavors or preservatives and less sugar than an apple. Liquid IV is available nationwide at Costco and Target. Or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code ATHLETIC at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order when you use promo code ATHLETIC at liquidiv.com. Get better hydration today at liquidiv.com, promo code ATHLETIC.
Okay, so I want to get in. We'll get into the playoffs. We'll get into the matchups. I want to first, though, if we talk about different schedules, if you talked about Kerr, for instance, trying to get his team into a rhythm. Let's get into this article that you wrote on the Warriors finally starting minicamp. But a minicamp that's happening in very, very strange circumstances. Can you get into what are the Warriors doing? How is it different? What are the restrictions? Can you get into that?
Yeah, the league and really like the 8 deleted teams and the Players Association have been in like dialogue for months now about, like, you know, these teams are just like, some of them wanted to do like a summer league. There was even talk, somebody put a suggestion in to go to Orlando and then sequester there, and then, like, as you know, as teams were eliminated and there was more room in Orlando, instead of having some families there, it was like, have the deleted teams and they'll play like a almost like a appetizer type game to the conference finals. You know, it's like, you know, Warriors Bulls summer league type action will lead into conference finals game 2. But that was shot down very quickly. A Vegas idea was thrown out of like mini summer league. That was shot down quickly. From the Warriors side of things, they were arguing the entire time, just let us practice in San Francisco in our bubble. Guys will just come from their homes in and we'll practice. But the Players Association the entire time said, no, if you're going to do any group activity, it has to be you know, as safe as the Orlando environment. And that obviously created a lot more logistical hurdles that have taken months and months to figure out. They have decided upon basically creating these in-market bubbles. So this week, just like the teams did before they went to Orlando, there's a week of individual workouts right now where every day any Warrior that is going to be involved in this bubble is coming in, getting a daily test, doing individual workouts, going home. starting Monday, they will sequester the entire team, or whoever's, you know, it's voluntary, but whoever's going to be involved, they're all going to go to a hotel, including coaches or anyone else that's in this bubble, stay in their hotel room for 48 hours, just like every player did in Orlando when they went. And then after 48 hours, they're doing Monday, Tuesday, they will emerge Wednesday. And for the next probably 7 to 10 days, Steve Kerr's kind of still sketching it out. And I think at any point he might pull the plug if, you know, after 7 days, he's like, this is good. But for the next however many days, they'll bus to and from the practice facility and do any type of group practices, scrimmages, they will want.
Yeah. I'm impressed that the NBA was able to, I don't know what to call it. A concession? Is it extracting a concession? Is it getting an agreement? I'm surprised. I feel like if I was in the players' union, even if I had concerns about safety, I would say, look, you're not having me stay in a hotel in the city I'm living in with the team I'm playing for. You're going to test me daily, but you're not going to have me stay in a hotel like I'm on a road trip when we are at home. But hey, apparently the players were okay enough with it, and that's the situation, and you're kind of away at home, which is very, very strange. I just
You want to know what the interesting part of it is? I know there were a lot of players that are like, do we really have to do all this? Particularly, you know, but I think bigger names around this are
if you have an Atherton mansion, you might not want to stay in a, and I know what the hotel is. The hotel is, it's a well-regarded hotel, but San Francisco being what it is, it is not exactly the lap of luxury. But yes, you were saying.
Well, not only it's, family responsibilities, you know, you're clearly referencing a man named Steph Curry who has three kids and a wife and a, you know, very speedy life outside, busy life outside, that suddenly it's like, oh, I'll see you in, you know, 10 days, whatever. But the point is, it was tough for the players. Like, they can't get mad at the Warriors for making them do this because it was the Players Association. Like, a Players Association fueled requirement. So it's like, well, it's your union that's, you know, forcing this. So
maybe this is what happens, though, when the leadership and the players union is negotiating this when they're playing inside the bubble. It's just, I don't care what you guys have to do in the Delete Eight. You know, I don't care how it has to be. Or does it extend to everybody's training camp in the future? Or is it just for these particular teams right now?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if this is the training camp requirements if we're still, like, you know, mid-pandemic come, what, January, February, whenever they decide to have training camps again.
Steph's house is a $31 million house, by the way. $31 million, if we're going through the stats of the different houses. Look, nobody's going to feel sorry for Steph Curry, considering all the amenities he has afforded during a time when a lot of people are so financially squeezed. But I could understand being rankled if I had a $31 million house with my family and everybody, and instead I'm holed up at a fairly cramped hotel as though I'm not at home. But such is life.
Well, and then on one side of it, it's they shouldn't complain because, like, you know, look at the teams in Orlando. You know, the Lakers, they're going to have to do it for 10 days. The Lakers and the Nuggets and all the teams still there are what, on like month two, nearly month three of doing it in Orlando, like way out of market. But at the same time, they have a carrot at the end of the day. Number one, we're playing games. Number two, there's a championship on the line, whereas the Warriors are doing this to practice behind closed doors. They're just going to have some practices. And then, hey, thanks for practicing eight times. See you guys whenever camp is.
Yeah, I would maybe take up some complaints with Andre, if I'm Steph, about what the hell's happening. As Andre sells his Lafayette house and Steph can't spend time at his Atherton house. But
Andre was also in quarantine while Steph was playing like the celebrity tournament with like Patrick Mahomes. So the Warriors have had quite a relaxing.
Yeah, they've had their time. And you know what? They might just be happy to just get back in and start doing work too. These guys have to be stir crazy by now. And it's
important for a lot of these guys to play basketball. They need to play the sport that is their profession. You know, imagine if like we just like couldn't, we were not allowed to write right now, like at all. Or podcasts. Like, you're just not.
I've thought about that. Have you ever thought about that? If you just got paid your full salary or paid enough money to do nothing, could you do that? Is that something that you would be happy doing?
Well, event, if you know you're going to have to do it again at some point, you know, like the Warriors have a pretty important season next season. Like, you don't want your skills to get stale, yeah, rusty. You know, the young guys need to improve. Klay Thompson needs to test his knee. Steph Curry, now look, if Steph Curry isn't involved in this camp or, like, you know, whatever, let's say he took it off, I wouldn't be like, uh-oh, bad news for Steph Curry. I think he'll be fine. But there are a lot of guys that need to get work in that aren't. It's a reason why Summer League's so important for young guys.
I'm very interested in what we're going to see from Steph, just because so much time to recuperate, so much time to work on the skill set. I want to see if we're going to see a new guy. And I know that, you know, it's been interesting too, and this is very behind the scenes. Brandon Payne, his private workout guy, and Bruce Frazier, aka Q, the Warriors coach that he works with, they were often, I think, I wouldn't say at odds, but working in different capacities with Steph, doing different things. And it seems like those two guys have formed a relationship and now have a collaborative, cohesive dynamic. So that's something that's happened lately, and I wonder if that's going to be a benefit, that they've kind of fully integrated the – because that's always a weird tension with – more so with superstars than lower-tier players, because lower-tier players don't normally have their private workout guy, and maybe can't afford that kind of thing. But that's – often a tension between team and the player is what the guy that they pay outside of the team has them doing versus what they're doing on the team. And it seems, at least with Steph and with the Warriors, everybody is on the same page.
Yeah, I mean, they have about as cohesive a superstar to franchise relationship as you can after 10 years, however many years now it's been for Steph. Have there been bumps? Yes. But I mean, compare those bumps to bumps that typically come between the superstar and franchise relationships that often end that relationship. I mean, we're sitting here. What did I say? We're about a decade into Steph Curry's Warriors career. I think if we were to predict if he will ever play for another franchise, I would say probably no, which is very rare in this age, is that he's probably going to have a Tim Duncan like run with the Warriors. Like, that's so hard to do now.
Huh? Yeah. I don't know what I would predict there. I feel like it'd be a coin flip, because there's always that chance.
Gary Payton, Carl Malone.
Yeah. Tom Brady. I mean, who could have predicted that Tom Brady would,
that's a good one.
if you want to call it plain. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, like, the meat of his career, there's really been zero buzz about him actually legitimately having a chance that he's gonna like bolt,
which is funny, because the Joe Steph dynamic has never been particularly warm, and yet it's been copacetic, I think largely because of Steph and how Steph is. But
Steph Rogers operates rationally, you know. He can go, yeah, you know, not everything here is absolutely perfect, but it's not like if I go over there everything's gonna be perfect either. I think there's like he understands that.
Yeah, and a lot of guys don't. I think there's a lot of the grass is always greener, and not always the case. I mean, I would love to know if Kawhi Leonard has any regrets about his decision. Maybe not, just because he loves Southern California so much that it was all worth it. But you do wonder if that was the move after everything that's happened versus what they had in Toronto, where, I mean, they're a few shots away from probably being in these conference finals again, even without Kawhi. So, and that's not even the best example of guys who have made moves and it didn't really work out in the end. So, yeah. But speaking of the conference finals, speaking of it, I just read your excellent preview of Lakers Nuggets, and I would recommend everybody does. What's the title of this? It's like just Lakers, like, Nuggets series.
Yeah, preview. Just simple, really, really complex title.
You didn't give some artsy key X factor key matchup prediction and more.
People love that kind of like subsection.
Yeah, they're into it. Yeah. So. Looking at this, I feel like you were just being polite, giving the Nuggets, giving it a Lakers in six. I could sense in your preview that you wanted to say five, but you were spotting the Nuggets a game, because it seems, at least based on what I am reading, you don't see much of a chance for them. Am I wrong?
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. Six. I was even on my podcast with Orem yesterday. we were debating 5 and 6, and I was like, he said 5, and I was like, I just kind of want to be a little different. I want to respect
these Nuggets. These Nuggets are scaring everybody. They're mocking everybody who picked the Clippers, and they're making fun of, I can't remember who at ESPN predicted a sweep, and they're just having such a jolly good time with it as though it was sane and rational to pick the Nuggets in that series, which it was not.
No, and the other thing is, like,
a just, monster upset.
You know, one team has, like, gone down 3-1 and in 6 different elimination games, been down double digits, so, like, has really almost died a few times. If Mike Conley's 3 goes down, they are a disappointment. They're a first-round loss.
I love that you started off the article with that, because it is good to remember. We're so results-oriented. It is fun to look back on how, to quote Howard Beck quoting Phil Jackson, it all turns on a trifle, and how, yeah, that rattles in. And what the hell were the Nuggets doing at the end of that game, too? We would have been laughing.
You mean that Torrey Craig missed layup when he didn't even have to shoot it?
We would have been laughing at them all offseason for that. That would have been, and it is just determined by whether that shot rattles in or out. And now it's almost like that never happened. We've almost completely forgotten about it, how they totally choked away a series they had won with just an insane decision.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Completely.
But
here we are.
So that argument is, like, you know, the Nuggets have just, like, almost, that fluke is too strong, but, like, they've just pulled the rabbit out of the hat several times to just even be here, to scratch their way here. Meanwhile, the Lakers have just been extremely impressive. You know, just pounding Portland, pounding the Rockets. 5-game gentleman sweeps where they just kind of floated around and lost both game ones, and then just 4 straight rumbled over both teams. So it's just like, yes, they should be the prohibitive favorites. I think the right pick probably is Lakers in 5. But I wanted to give Jamal Murray and Jokic, who's their best player, most people would say, and, like, he was, wow, man, his game 7 was ridiculous. But I think Jamal Murray's been the difference. He has turned into what I didn't know he could be. He's basically, if you just look at the numbers, Steph Curry in these playoffs.
Well, you showed one of those clips of him hitting 2 threes over Kawhi, and the second one, he just cooks Kawhi embarrassingly. It might have been from the second game of that series, yeah. But that's a different Jamal Murray, and maybe a different Kawhi, frankly.
I think he's kind of, I mean, we saw, remember, this was a discussion we were having during the finals last year. Like, he wasn't very good defensively against the Warriors.
He was really bad defensively in that finals. And I think with his reputation and profile, people just go, okay, great job, amazing. And he won the finals MVP. It was not a dominating finals. He had this really great stretch.
He won it offensively, too. He won the finals MVP on his
own. He won it offensively. But it was just interesting to see him cooked again and again defensively and not having it gain any kind of traction, because that's just not – I mean, he's the defensive player of the year for one of these seasons. So that's just not the reputation. But, man, Jamal Murray really cooked him.
Yeah. Jamal Murray in these playoffs, 27 points a game on 50% shooting, 49% from 3, and 91% from the line. And, you know, if you really – kind of turn, the reason why I think, you know, maybe the Nuggets can steal 2 is because they've had very divergent games in these playoffs. They have 6 losses where they've played bad and shot bad, and, you know, oftentimes were blown out. Remember the first round, like, Utah was blowing them out early. I think Denver had, like, a 130 defensive rating through 4 games of these playoffs, but they're 8 wins. They get unconsciously hot from 3. I mean, Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic in the 8 wins are both above 50% from 3. And a lot of, like, Jokic is going to do the pick and pop rainbow threes that you're kind of going to have to give up a little bit. And then Murray, if Murray's hitting these really tough pull-ups, and the pull-ups, I believe I had the stat in there, 28 of 48 on pull-ups in the wins, pull-up threes. You know, you could steal a couple games if you're just – you're Steph Curry hot, basically.
I think the worry of your Denver is that you did have this matchup advantage against the Clippers, and everything can come from one advantage, and you can build on it, where Jokic was just killing Trez, and they just didn't have anybody to guard him. And it doesn't seem like that's the case against the Lakers, at least based on the regular season games, where you saw for stints Anthony Davis guarding Jokic and doing quite well. and I'm sure you dug into some of that. And so that's – I think that would concern me from the Nuggets side of things. I guess there is the question of how do you guard the Murray-Jokic pick and roll, and you can get something out of that, because it's one thing to have Davis guard, but it's another thing to kind of switch that. But I guess – do you think there's going to be any McGee guarding Jokic, or Vogel's just not messing around and even doing
well? I would have guessed he wasn't going to mess – I would have guessed he wasn't going to mess around, because, you know, I thought they found something against Houston. I thought they found out against Houston that they're the best small ball team in the basketball. You know, I think Anthony Davis is a center. He doesn't want to be called a center, yeah, but he is.
Definitely.
And when the season is on the line and the sure, you know, all season you can be a little small or power forward. You know, you can be a spot up guy and sometimes show off your skill, even though you can do that at center too. But when it comes down to it, every time that Anthony Davis has had a successful team in the playoffs, which is only twice now. It's been once with Nikola Mirotic as his stretch, you know, counterpart in the front court to open up the floor. And then right now, Markieff Morris came into the last series and supplanted JaVale McGee, and the Lakers took off. They're, you know, Davis, I think they were plus 35 with Markieff and Davis on the floor together against Houston, like minus 6 when Markieff was off. And he's not even that good. He's just like the idea of him, hey, he's a four that's going to shoot instead of JaVale, who's going to be in the dunker spot, clogging up the lane. So I personally think Vogel should start with that lineup. JaVale probably should get DMPs. And if you want a backup center, play Dwight in the non-Davis minutes. That's what I would predict. But then Vogel came out yesterday and said, you'll see us play more of our traditional way. That was his quote. So I wouldn't be I don't know.
That's so strange to me. And maybe he's lying, and maybe that's just what Davis demands and he doesn't want to do it full time. But yeah, if I'm the Nuggets, I'm hoping for as much of that as possible. I'm saying we need more of that.
Did you see the numbers? I mean, they were like minus 18 with JaVale and Davis in the regular season in the four Nuggets games. Meanwhile,
well, it's not only that. I mean, I've watched McGee play the Nuggets before Anthony Davis arrived, and you know, Jokic can hit that 3-pointer. And yeah, maybe he's not a pure shooter, maybe he's reluctant, but McGee is so bad at guarding on the perimeter and makes such bad decisions. And so, yeah, it's I think especially against stretch fives, I don't trust McGee. And Howard, I haven't really developed an opinion on that front, but
it's both ways. It's offense and defense. You know, the offense is you open up the floor for LeBron, AD pick and rolls with nobody clogging the lane. You know, Davis has everyone just has more space, and Markieff Morris might randomly hit 4 threes as he did twice in the Houston series. But also, you're mentioning the defensive aspect. How did they turn that Houston series on the defensive end? They just started selectively doubling on Harden and really getting out on him, and that was because they were way more mobile. Markieff Morris had a pretty good defensive series, and like, you know, you go back to game one that they lost. Dwight Howard, and I mean, you've seen this, the way Houston targets centers. They just, Harden got Dwight Howard on him a couple times, foul, right away, boom, boom. And you didn't see Dwight Howard really again for the whole series. So,
yeah.
Now, Denver isn't Houston, but I, like you, it seems, think Frank Vogel just needs to be proactive and just go, hey, we're the best small ball team in basketball because we have a 6'9" point guard and Anthony Davis as a center. Let's just play that way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's devastating. That's totally devastating. That's the way to do it. And I kind of think if they run into trouble in the series, then that's what they're going to do. That it's going to be, maybe they're not going full tilt with it, but if they fall down 1-0 or 2-1 at that point, it's okay, enough of this. You know, we're playing the real way now.
My argument would be don't wait. Because he didn't really wait against Houston. They were never like, yeah, they went down 1-0 to Houston, but like, it's not like they were backs against the wall. Okay, fine, we'll make the move. Like, I thought he was pretty proactive with it. And I would say keep being proactive with it.
Yeah, I would agree. But maybe there's more of a sense of, well, Houston's small, so we have to be small. And Denver's more traditional, so we can be more traditional. But ironically, you're better off going small. You're maybe even better off going small against them, just because of the unique of how unique Jokic is as an offensive force.
That was kind of the funny D'Antoni quote post-game where somebody was like, you know, is this a referendum after they lost the series? It was like, was this a referendum on small ball and the fact that it can't win in the playoffs? And he was like, I don't know. Why don't you ask the Lakers? They just beat us with small ball. So it's like, yeah, I think the Lakers need to embrace what is their best style of play. And you know what? I think Anthony Davis just needs to embrace the fact that he's the best center in basketball, and he's a center, and he should just be a center. Yeah. Like that's just what I'd say. He's not a power forward. Honestly, you know, and Steve Kerr says this all the time, power forwards are dead. The traditional power forward is dead. You're a point guard, you're a wing, you're a center. You're not, it's, the Lakers play two centers because Davis just wants them to, but the reality is like, you should just play one center.
The league is ones, wings and fives. That's what the league is basically. Ones, wings and fives. And I can't think of like, what's a prototype. I mean, maybe Millsap is a prototypical power forward.
Yeah, he's had a terrible playoffs. I mean,
he's the worst
plus minus on the Nuggets. I think their defensive rating is like 118 or something with him on the floor. They're dying. I mean, Udonis Haslams of the world are gone. I think a great example is, you know, you go back to Frank Vogel's Indiana Pacers team. And David West was the traditional power enforcer four, right? He is the power forward that you know, if you could create an old school power forward, it's David West. By the time he's on the Warriors, you're a center, man. You're not a power forward. You're not playing with JaVale McGee like you used to play with Roy Hibbert.
I'd say Anthony Davis, you average over two blocks a game. You're not a power forward. You're a center. You are a defensive center. You are doing the things that we associate with centers. And I guess it's the Kevin Garnett thing of you want to be regarded as more skilled than big. And so there's an allure to being called a power forward and not even being called a seven footer in the case of Kevin Garnett. And maybe that's what a lot of the self-definition is. And I guess maybe there's an aversion to some of the physical pounding that you need to absorb at the center spot from guarding a guy, a beast like Jokic. And so maybe there's some of that, but you're right. Anthony Davis is a five. That's what it is. At least when the Lakers are being their most effective.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting. I went back, this was before the Blazers series round one. I went back and watched a bunch of Blazers Pelicans from that first round sweep in 2018 when it was Mirotic. And that was the year. So the Pelicans were trying the two big stuff with DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis. DeMarcus tears his Achilles in January. And then they do the deadline deal for Mirotic. And then they become way better. And they're the six seed playing the three seed Portland in that series. And they swept them easily because Portland just had, like, Nurkic couldn't stay with Davis, but then so they tried to switch it up and have Aminu on Davis and Nurkic on Mirotic, and then that worked terribly because he just kept sagging in, and the Mirotic was just stroking threes in his face. And, the Pelicans go on to the second round and lose 4-1 in a series we covered to the Warriors, which kind of makes you forget that team. But I think that was just watching that first round series with the way Holiday was playing, the way they had the spread stretch four, the perfect stretch four next to Davis. Like, that was a really good Pelicans team. They just happened to run into the Warriors. And that kind of masks the fact that, like, Davis, this is just like how you have, if you want to be a playoff winner, you just need to be a center.
Yeah. And I'm not with that whole, hey, we should zig when the other team zags. I remember it was, Memphis is doing it way different than the other teams. And maybe in this age of small ball, what they're doing is, no, it's three is more than two. That's where it's at. Three is more than two, and you get more space for having the threat of the three. So it compounds.
Well, and I think it's also depends on your personnel, right? You know, like Memphis was Memphis because who Memphis had on their team, you know, when they had Tony Allen, Zebo, Marc Gasol, like it made sense for them to play that style. If you have Anthony Davis on your team, it doesn't make sense to have him as your power forward. Yeah. It just doesn't. Like, he's the best center in the league, so play him at his position. And like, look, we both understand locker room dynamics and superstar dynamics, and like, you have to, coddle guys at times, and particularly during the regular season, you're not going to just be like, fine, 82 games, you have to do what we tell you to do. But I would say right now, there probably needs to be a conversation with Davis of like, just,
I think we're talking each other into, it's getting risky. It is quite arrogant and risky not to play optimally in the conference finals, even if you are the Lakers.
Yeah,
do have this massive advantage. Let me look at the betting on it, actually. Have you seen the series price? Have you seen
I saw, you know how like we had
occasionally get those emails from people that are like, this is, you know, I didn't actually look on betting sites, but I got an email where I saw like the Lakers, I think, were like minus 500 almost in the series. And the path has been cleared so much for them because, you know, Clippers done, Bucks done.
For game one, they're -7 for game one is what I'm seeing. Okay, right now.
We're just talking, yeah, game scores.
So that, and that's on a neutral court. You know, that's with no home court boosting you up 3 points. That is some Denver disrespect right there. 7-point spread game one. And if you want to compare it, Boston-Miami for game two is -2.5 Boston.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and the reality is it's not out of the question that they start JaVale and go more traditional center lineup and half of Davis's minutes are with another big, and then they just win, and they win the series because they're better because they have LeBron, who's like smells his fourth title at this point with the Clippers and Bucks being eliminated, and just dominates even though it's more of a clogged court and it's not optimal because they're just better than the Nuggets both ways. But that, I still don't think that's how they should play.
So I wrote something on how the bubble made upsets less likely, and then following that, the Bucks were upset, although I don't think that's an upset. Somebody actually wrote about in the aftermath of it that maybe it was too early a call to say that upsets weren't happening because of the Bucks losing. But I think, I mean, sacrilege. I think the Heat are better than the Bucks. But never mind. You know, moving on. But obviously, Nuggets Clippers is a legitimate upset, like a legitimate massive crazy upset. Where do you fall down on this? Do you think that upset more likely in the bubble, less likely in the bubble, no difference at all from what we're used to?
Well, I think every situation it needs to be kind of like examined on its own. And if we're just talking about the Clippers Nuggets series, I think if that is played normally, I think if that is played in May and four of the seven games are in Staples Center, and when the Clippers are up 3-1, game five and game seven are in LA, I think they win that series. But so yeah, in a sense, I guess like the bubble environment and just like really the environment of the
country. Makes it a little easier to come back in a series as the underdog, it would seem.
You're not playing one less home game. You know, everyone, yeah, you're playing seven games in the same arena that is of no advantage to either team. So yeah, automatically, like, you know, what's the number, like 80% of home teams win game sevens? Well, that's off the table. So that inherently right there. But the other thing is, like, the Clippers are their own disaster story of a situation themselves that doesn't necessarily have to do this with the bubble. It has to do with how they attack the season. I mean, you wrote about like the load management aspect of it all and just like the lack of chemistry, the arrogance, whatever you want to say. Like, they were their own disastrous situation. Paul George's play, I mean, you could go 10 different ways that I'm not necessarily just going to blame the bubble. I'm going to blame the way that they professionally went about their business.
Yeah, I'm seeing for opening series prices, Lakers -650 and Nuggets +425 is what I'm looking at right now. And maybe that's been altered. Maybe that's jumped around. I'm not sure. I would stay away. I would not. I don't look at this and go, oh, the Nuggets have this spicy matchup right here. If the Nuggets do it, I mean, it's a hell of a team of destiny, Cinderella run. But I can't, just trying to be cool and logical, look at this and go, yeah, the Nuggets, here's how they do it. Yeah. I just can't.
I can't see it. It feels a little bit like when we were going into the first round, Blazers, Lakers, and you had the super hot team that had like kind of stolen some headlines and was, you know, they had the really scorching point guard who was shooting lights out, and everyone, it was kind of like the trendy pick to be like, you know, either Lakers in seven, but yeah, watch out, or even like
Barkley. Didn't Barkley say a sweep?
Barkley predicted sweep, which was ridiculous in its own right. But you had some like legitimate people out there like saying Blazers are going to upset them in seven. You know, like, watch out. And the reality was the Blazers had, just to get in, had really gone so pedal to the metal. They were exhausted by the time they got there. And the Lakers are a huge, like, defensively punishing team with a coach who I think Vogel's had a great playoffs. Regardless of that conversation we just had about Davis at center, like, Vogel has, I think, defensively schemed up Lillard and Harden really well and taking them away. And he, I think in his past, going back to Pacers, those Pacers Heat series where the Pacers really pushed the Heat, he's shown to be a really good defensive coach in the postseason. And I think he's going to probably do that too. What might be a pretty exhausted Denver team. And a Denver team that is to the point that, man, mission is accomplished this season. You know, even if the Lakers take them out, like nobody's, like this isn't an extreme disappointment where Mike Malone's got to worry about his job going into the offseason.
Darren Revelle tweets that a bet into BetMGM, $200,000 on Lakers to win the title would net you $121,212. If you had the money to do this, Slates, if you could just throw around $200,000, are you so confident in the Lakers winning these two series that that to you would be a good move overall?
I'm very confident they're going to beat the Nuggets. I would definitely pick them to beat the Celtics. I'm going to pick them to beat the Celtics or Heat, whoever they play, assuming like full health entering the finals. I'm not sure I would take those odds though. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's me. Like, I don't ever really like betting on like those type of odds.
The favorites.
Yeah.
Betting the favorite is just not a fun, that's just not a fun thing to do, even if it's prudent in certain circumstances.
But I will say, like, and you're probably along the same lines as me, like Lakers have a pretty clear path here. Like, yeah. You know, it's this look, and you
pretty
know,
clear path. I'm not so, I mean, probably give them the edge over any team they face, but you know, I could talk myself into a Celtics upset a little easier than they could a Nuggets upset.
Yeah, Davis will kill the Celtics, I think.
Oh yeah, that's an issue.
Yeah, and I would say the other thing, you know, LeBron knows his moments. You know, LeBron knows when he really needs to mentally get there because the path is cleared for him. Whereas I think LeBron also knows, I'm not getting by the Warriors, so I'm almost not going to like exert all the energy needed to try to get by them in a couple of those seasons where it was like the Durant Warriors. But I think right now, now that he's seen the Nuggets took down the Clippers, because I think he was gearing himself up for like a LA versus LA war.
Yeah.
But now I assume he's sitting there like, if I can just mentally and physically just go as hard as possible over the next 3 weeks, I have my fourth title. It is there ready to be handed to me. And say what you want about LeBron in general and the brand and all that, like, I think we know the killer instinct he has for the title when the path is cleared. And I just think it is.
I want to close up with a team that is, what am I looking for? I don't want to say near and dear to your heart, but near and dear to your past, the Oklahoma City Thunder. I just want some insight into what happened out there, because I find it curious after such a successful season that you've got Donovan wanting to get out of there. And obviously they're set up incredibly for a rebuild. What's your take on that situation? Were you surprised by the Donovan exodus, and how happy is Presti right now, regardless, just because of all the goddamn first round picks they have coming to them?
Yeah, I wasn't surprised by it, because Billy Donovan was pried away from Florida by Sam Presti to coach the Durant Westbrook Thunder. It feels so long ago now, but like that was his team he was hired on to. You know, he signed that contract that just ran out. The coach, and he coached him well, and he wanted to be, you know, he wasn't the type of college coach like, I want to come in like John Beilein just did and found out pretty quickly that he didn't want to do, but like a developmental team, 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds, guys I just coached in college. No, Billy Donovan wanted to come coach superstars that could win NBA titles, and he almost did in year one. He was almost an NBA champ. He's up 3-1 on the Warriors. We all know how close the Thunder potentially could have been to a ring that year. And then obviously the franchise and the team he expected to coach was flipped on its head. And I think Sam Presti pivoted very well to keep Billy Donovan engaged there of like, hey, Westbrook stayed around. We got him. Okay, now the Paul George situation's here. You still, you know, you're still coaching a win now type team, even though, you know, they didn't get past the first round, but at least, you know, going into the season, your mind is there if you're Billy Donovan. But it was pretty clear last summer, heading into the final season of Billy Donovan's coaching contract, which they didn't negotiate to extend, that the Thunder was ready for a massive rebuild. Now, they were better than expected this year. I think Donovan probably had his best regular season coaching job this year. Chris Paul was awesome for them. But Sam Presti has made his future plans known, number one. And also ownership. You know, this is not a great time in the oil industry. This is not a great time in Oklahoma economically.
It's so perfect for them. While being imperfect. I mean, the financial crush is terrible, but they've got, if you're Presti, this is the perfect, this is all GMs want, is to extend their stay, right? And to not have the heat on them and not have the pressure on them. It's so perfect to come to ownership and say, hey, we're not spending a bunch of money on players right now. It's all about the future. Give me a few years to just fail in terms of the regular season, and we're just going to build the stockpile. Do you know, top of your head, how many first round picks they have coming to them between now and 2026?
I saw a graph. Did you see the graphic that was floating around?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. Yeah,
absolutely absurd. I mean, it's
I think it's 15
over the next 15. What, 7 years or something?
Yeah, 15.
That's, and you know, he's been a good drafter, you know, like this is not a
well this, and you start off with some of these teams and you think, okay, maybe they're not going to be bad anytime soon, but in the future, and the future always does arrive, you don't know how good the Clippers are going to be in 2024 or how good the Rockets are going to be in 2024 or 2026. You know, it's, you
honestly
really don't
both
know.
Teams are heading towards very, like, that's what's made this month so good for Sam Presti. Like, the Clippers and Rockets suddenly are entering unknowns and quick unknowns, and when we're talking 2024, like, it would not shock me if the Rockets and the Clippers were lottery teams by then.
Yeah, and what if you get, now I'm just dreaming on the Thunder future, what if you get Cade Cunningham next season?
Well, he'd only have to drive about 60 minutes down the road because he's an Oklahoma State Cowboy, which I know very well. As one myself, I've lived in Stillwater.
What region of the country did you grow up in, Anthony? What region did you grow up in?
Rona Park, California. which is more country than you like. Yeah, California has more,
like,
country.
One of the characters on Yellowstone.
I know, but California has more country areas than people realize. You know, when particularly people that have either very rarely or not been to California, they think that it's like all San Francisco, LA. Like, that's just what it is. But it's like there are some country, but I'm not from one that's like super country, but I'm, you know, it's, yeah, it's also not,
oh, you definitely, you go to parts of California and you go, where is this twang coming from?
Yeah.
How did this happen? It's a big state. It's a massive state. And so there's definitely part of that. Yellowstone, by the way, I had not heard of that TV show. Have you heard of this TV show? Have you heard of it?
I've heard of it, but I haven't heard any reviews of it, although I feel like I'm about to get one.
Well, it's like a Two Americas situation, because I had never heard of this TV show until one day I was looking at the ratings and saw that they got 5.3 million viewers for their season finale of season 3 on something called the Paramount Network that I'd never heard of. It's just, what is this?
There's so much TV out there now. It's crazy. But yeah, sure.
Apparently it's a Kevin Costner vehicle where he is a rancher in Montana and gets up to shady business. And I don't know much about it beyond all of that. But apparently Yellowstone is doing quite well. Shout out Yellowstone. Shout out Oklahoma City Thunder with all their first round draft picks. Shout out Jade Hoy, who is doing an amazing job producing podcasts for us. And of course, a big thanks to Anthony. Do you have anything, Mr. Slater, to plug going forward?
Just, I would say, Lakers coverage. You know, I'm going to be writing all play, or, you know, the rest of the playoffs with the Lakers on a, you know, game by game, night by night basis, series preview, which you mentioned, and all the post game stuff I'll be writing. And, you know, I might even have some Warriors stuff to write in the next couple weeks, because as we talked about, they are practicing coming up, which means they'll be doing some interviews. I guess that's more action than has been there the last 6 months or so.
Yeah, I look forward to that. It's good to get out of the house, which you should all do for the people living in areas where the air has cleared up. Stay safe out there, everybody. We will be back. Enjoy the NBA playoffs. Enjoy all the sports on television. Hell, maybe enjoy Yellowstone and tell me if it's any good and if I should check it out. Take care, everybody.
I have a hard time picking against the Clippers. Who do you think is going to win the West this year?
Clippers.
I think their pieces fit together a little bit better.
I think it's the Clippers' championship to lose this year.
The Clippers are the best team in basketball.
So I'm going with the Clippers.
That's why the Clippers are my choice.
I'm going to say the Clippers.
So I'm going with the Clippers.
I can't go with the Lakers.
Here come the Clippers.
The Clippers.
The bench. They just wear you down over the course of 48 minutes.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.